Blog Talk Radio.
We are the heirs of that first revolution.
Will a strong and united America still be a force for freedom and prosperity around the world?
America has created the longest peacetime economic expansion in our history.
We are the heirs of that first revolution.
Good common sense and sound judgment of the American people and their essential love of justice.
Hi, welcome to the Kudzu Vine for the last Sunday in September. Catherine, I know you are feeling bull moose tonight.
Oh, you know, what is with, you know, former Governor Burns, you know.
So you're not feeling bull moose?
I'm not really feeling bull moose.
Okay, well, Tim, I know you've got your wig on.
Oh, yeah, I there's nothing I want to do more than to go back to the party that the Republicans replaced. That would be a lot of fun. And I think I know exactly what he's doing, David.
Well, we're going to talk about that. I tell you what, I know a lot of people are probably saying that I'm a know-nothing, but I don't want to be in the know-nothing party. But talking about old parties, if you don't know what we're talking about, and I'll tell you, this really didn't get near as much play as I felt it should have. I guess maybe there were some big events going on in D.C., like for Blog for Democracy, for instance. Roy Barnes, in a speech in Gwinnett County this past week, said that he was sick of the Democrats and the Republicans. He is a Democrat, the leader of the party at times in the past, say, 10 years. And he said he's sick of them, and he'd just become a bull moose or a Whig if they were still around. I was absolutely floored by those comments. Catherine, you were starting to get into it. Tim, you were starting to get into it. Tim, since you weren't here last week, let's give you the first chance to tell us what he's doing.
Well, I'll tell you exactly what I think he's doing. I think he's pulling a page out of Zell Miller's playbook from some years ago when that Senate seat opened up and we had our special election. You might recall Senator Miller started that stuff. Well, I'm not going to run as a Democrat, or I'm representing Democrats. I want to represent Democrats and Republicans and independents and this and that and the other. And he started talking like a Republican, and eventually he started acting like one. I think Governor Barnes is doing the same thing. And I'm going to tell you something right now. It's a little strong to say this, but I meant it when Miller did it, and I mean it now. I will not vote for Governor Barnes. I will not. I will not vote for him. I'll write somebody's name in or something because I just as soon have a Republican in office as I had a Democrat who acts like one. Truman was right. When a Republican runs against a Republican, then a Republican always wins. So that's what I think's going on.
Well, I think it's kind of boneheaded because I think you're right. You know, he's trying to appeal to both, you know, people in both parties, but we have a primary, and he's just making Democrats, he's shunning Democrats by doing that, and he needs the Democrats to vote for him, because God knows the Republicans are not going to vote for him. They're going to be voting on the other side. I think I'm not going to be quite as harsh, because I don't like to say I'll never vote for him, but I'm hesitant now.
Yeah, I'll say this. I see what y'all are saying about general election strategy, but, you know, he actually has real living opponents in the primary that, you know, he's got three people with resumes that, you know, could certainly be worthy of the gubernatorial nomination. I think he took his lead, and it's really, we talked about this last week, it won't seem to get, he can't get above 45. I think he may have just shaved off as many as 10 points off of that lead. He may be in the 35s if enough people hear this, and I think it can and will be used against him. You know, can you imagine the mailer that comes in your box, the hardcore Democrats, talking about how he's sick of the Democratic Republican Party, and it's right there. It's his quote, as told to the Gwinnett Chamber of Commerce. I don't know who he spoke to. It's just ridiculous. I think he's made a real problem for himself in the primary. Does he get votes out of this? Probably not, because the folks that probably, you know, like what he, you know, that kind of statement, they're just going to see him play in politics. I don't know if they're going to really be that excited about Roy Barnes being, you know, oh, I'm not really that good of a Democrat anymore candidate. I just don't think that washes. So all he's done, he's got all downside to me with this.
I think so, too. I think it was just boneheaded. I think he was just speaking off the cuff. You know, he wasn't really thinking about what he was saying.
I think he was thinking exactly about what he was saying, because Governor Barnes is that kind of a strategic person. And you know, I wasn't being harsh earlier. I was being realistic. I am not going to vote for him. That's it.
We have two races in the general election
as well. I'll write somebody's name in. I certainly ain't going to vote for Oxendine or whoever, but I will not vote for Governor Barnes. I'm sick of stuff like this.
Yeah, and I'll tell you where I was at. Basically, I think that it's going to be a tough race to win the 2010 governor's race. I think it can be done on the right circumstances, but I don't think that right now Governor Barnes has a better shot at that than the other candidates. I think it's kind of like a football team that's rebuilding. You can rebuild with old players or young players. Well, usually you have to go with young players, the future. And now, not that some of these gentlemen are that much different in age, but at least they're new faces. I'm kind of ready just to say, hey, let's just try a different face. We've been there. I mean, what did Steve tell us last week? This will be the fourth time he's run for governor, and he's won once.
Uh-huh.
Or was it the fifth? I mean, what did he say? Steve say fourth or fifth? And really, I was like, wow, that's a pretty astounding record. And then he does this stuff, you know, and I just don't see where this gets him. And it's going to be when he goes to party meetings and stuff.
Yeah,
I mean, how
exactly.
Are people going to respond to this? I'll be very interested to hear what's said on October 3rd at the next state committee meeting, in which there are elections. You probably will have pretty good attendance. I wonder what the vibe will be. And I'll tell you this, I don't see a lot of folks, you know, a big cadre of Barnes supporters at these meetings already. Catherine, what do you think on that?
Oh, I don't. There wasn't anybody in Dublin, I don't think. Was there anybody there?
You know, I'm sure
they both had
people later on, but it wasn't this big, you know, mass of people to, you know, support him. You didn't see a lot. I mean, I'm sure some of the folks that supported him last time are still will. I mean, David Worley was a great supporter of his in '98, and he may be still with him. And I can respect David staying with him. There's nothing wrong with loyalty in that case. But you just don't see this inertia that's going to push him forward, you know, to certainly box everybody out. And, Tim, I don't know what you're doing next Saturday, but you may end up having to go to that meeting just to see what's going on.
Well, yeah. It sounds like it is going to be interesting.
I think that part of it will be. And of course, then there's an election. I just got an email. This is something I don't think we plan to talk about, but I'll mention it since it was kind of come up. Next Saturday at the IBEW, they're electing a new secretary to replace Steve Leeds. The candidates are Barbara Campbell, Laverne Gaskins, who I'm not really familiar with, and Andre Walker. I'll go ahead and jump on this first. I will tell each of these three folks, I don't have any, you know, set idea who I'm going to vote for. I'm very undecided. So all three of these people, if you're listening to this show, you may want to get a hold of me. Tell me why you should be it, because I am very undecided. Catherine, what about you? And do you know Laverne?
I know all three of them.
Okay.
Laverne is the lead counsel for Valdosta State College or University or whatever. She's relatively new to the party. She's not actually a state committee member. I did sign her petition to become a candidate. I think she'd be a great addition to the party. She's smart and capable and interested. And I always like, you know, I'm always appreciate people who are willing to step up and represent, especially new people who don't have a lot of experience. Of course, we all know Andre. I think Andre's a hard worker, but I'm not convinced that I think he is less appealing to me, because I think he likes to cause controversy, and I think we need someone in that position who can help keep everything sort of in check and you know, take good notes and serve as the secretary. Barbara Campbell has run for a lot of things. She ran for DNC chair. She's run for, didn't she run for chair?
I don't really remember what she ran for, but she has the best rhymes. Doesn't she just have the best rhymes?
She's a very dynamic speaker. she's certainly served the party very well in DeKalb. I have nothing against her, but I won't be there. I'm going to be in D.C. next weekend. If I was, I would certainly be voting for Laverne.
Okay, can I jump in with a question, guys?
Voting will be the next question, but Tim, go ahead.
Well, I was gonna ask for some of our list, the benefit of some of our listeners out there, if y'all would explain how it is that someone can run for one of these offices when they are not actually a member of the state committee. How does that work?
It's a petition process. You have to get a number. Is it 25?
You have to
state
get 30 signatures of
30 signatures.
Current state committee members, and that allows you to be a candidate for a leadership position.
And pretty much, the people that have tried to do this, if you ask enough folks, you're going to get it, because most people's thinking is everybody, you know, can have the chance to run.
Signed two petitions, but one person didn't get enough signatures. He didn't try until, like, the very last day.
I will say this. Sometimes it is better to be on the state committee because you understand the inner workings, but that can vary depending on the field, I think.
Well, I think also, generally, if you're on the state committee, people know you, and so...
That can be good or bad,
you know.
Right?
Well, I don't want to say anything critical about the other two candidates. I think everyone has their strengths and something to bring to the table. But I am a fan of Laverne's.
Yeah, I just not for me. I did see the petition email. I need the email to tell me more about her qualifications, because then I can get familiar with her. But that'll be interesting to see. But then I do think at that same meeting that we're going to get a sense of is there any brushback to the Governor Barnes statement in Gwinnett County? Because it hasn't been on the blogs like I think it should be. Maybe since we're talking about it, who knows, Catherine, that may lead into a blog for Democracy
Post.
But then people can react to. I don't necessarily want to direct our show necessarily. It's great if they do. But then what do they think about what we're saying about Governor Barnes? And should he suffer in the party for making this kind of statement? And I guess that kind of segues into we were talking about the strategic thinking of Roy Barnes, and that segues into a new poll that Strategic Vision just did this week, and it showed a little movement. On one side it showed movement, on the other side it didn't. Let's kind of just change gears, talk about the Republican side. John Oxendine continues to lead. Tim, do you have that number pulled up? If not,
I don't have it, no.
38, I've got it right in front of me.
Yeah, go ahead, Catherine.
Oxendine, 38, Handle, 15, Deal, 10, Eric Johnson, 6. And then we're down in the threes, twos, and ones for the rest of the guys.
Yeah, so that shows that John Oxendine lead, and Nathan Deal, who got in this race, is showing, like, no momentum. Another thing I took from it, Jeff Chapman, who's a state senator, got into the race. He's polling half of what Ray McBerry, who is kind of a gadfly candidate, was getting. I think if I were him, I might think about getting out just as quickly as I got in, because I just don't see the candidacy going anywhere. You know,
there is a 25% undecided, though.
Yeah, but even if he gets all of it,
not just about Chapman, but, I mean, that's a pretty big number when you've got that many candidates.
Yeah, I mean, it is a big number, but then – you got to think it probably, even if it splits evenly among the top four, they've got to go after Oxendine. I mean, that is the strategy. You've got to go after the leader. I think it's interesting. Eric Johnson, you know, he kind of went all in this past week or two and, you know, resigned from his Senate seat, and he's still at 6. That move kind of separated him from our favorite Republican in the gubernatorial race, Austin Scott, but it didn't do much else. So, It's just interesting to look at. Tim, what's your thoughts on this?
Well, you were mentioning that there was really some movement. I don't see it. In the previous poll back in August, Oxendine was at 39. Now he's at 38.
Not on the Republican side. The movement's not on the Republican side. It's by one man on the Democratic side. Any thoughts on the Republican side before we move over there?
Well, I just want to talk briefly about Nathan Deal. You know, last week Steve Anthony was pretty adamant that he thought Nathan Deal was going to, you know, rise and ultimately be the leader. And I'm just interested. It'll be really interesting to see how that, if that happens, and how, and who it, you know, it would have to hurt Oxendine, but. You know, I was surprised by that because he was very adamant about it.
It kind of looks like things are frozen in that race, guys.
Yeah, I think I think everything's gonna happen when they start going up on TV and start really spending their money.
Well, let's go ahead and we'll talk about the floods as a tragedy and some other things about him. But because we're talking about Oxendine and what can bring him down, I'm thinking, and I hope it's not the case, but I know from you know, Katrina, particularly in Mississippi, because I actually worked the insurance commissioner's race in Mississippi, and I know what an issue it was. They did not pay insurance companies. State Farm was one. I think Allstate was another. A lot of the big insurance companies did not pay claims like they were supposed to, like people felt their policy stated. And people were big-time upset at the insurance companies. Now, in that race, it was an open seat, so there wasn't a real, you know, person to go get. But in this governor's race, this could become a major issue because you got to think folks are going to start filing claims. But within 6 months, they're going to want some money. I mean, they're probably going to want it a lot faster than that. But by 6 months, people are going to be red hot if they don't see any action. And then they're going to turn to the insurance commissioner. Of course, this is some of the areas that affected were big Republican areas, Gwinnett County. Carroll County.
Cobb County and Douglas County.
Yeah, some of these big Republican strongholds with lots of votes. Well, if these vote, and they're going to be talking to the people that, you know, they work with, go to church with, all these different things, their kids do school things with, even if it's not your home. If these folks all get hot at Oxendine because they think he's protecting his buddies, the insurance industry, I think he could lose some major points in a hurry. What do y'all think of that theory?
I think that's a good theory. I hope it's not the case. I really hope that we don't have those kind of problems because, you know, people are really suffering. It's really bad.
I mean, that's why I say I hope it's not the case. But, I mean, why are the insurance companies in Georgia going to be different than what happened in
they're not going to be. I'm sure that because, you know, the – regulations on insurance companies are, like, Georgia's, like, among the worst.
Probably with Mississippi.
Yeah. And, you know, you talk about State Farm. I'm still mad at State Farm over that Katrina stuff.
Yeah, and so that's what, you know, we have to look forward to. So I think that could be something that Oxendine, it could really hurt him. Tim, what's your thoughts?
Well, I sort of agree with you. I think it's a possibility. However, I don't know about, you know, comparing it to what might have happened in Katrina or whatever. Obviously, the feds, for one thing, moved a lot faster. And there'll be more pressure from the federal level now for the insurance companies to, you know, stand up and do what they got to do. And I believe that Commissioner Oxendine will actually move on this quicker just because he is a candidate for governor.
Yeah, I think that might be the case.
But then he may fall out of favor with his big donors.
That's right. But at that point and with the lead he's got, he will fall into favor with a grateful voting public.
Yeah, but here's the thing. What if he falls out of favor with his cash cow? And then his cash cow, let's say they max out, they've already maxed out for him, then they could go max out for Karen Handel or Eric Johnson or Nathan Deal.
I'll tell you what he can do. Yeah, but what he can do that none of those other candidates can do, David, he can pick up the phone and have several of those big guys in his office in no time, and he can tell them privately, look, guys, play ball, and then when I'm governor, you know you'll have a friend in the governor's office. You do not know that with any of these other candidates.
Yeah, but so I have a feeling these insurance companies,
advantage.
They want it all. I mean,
yeah.
You know, but they just, to me, I thought they want it all the time. And so, you know, they know this is a, I mean, this having to replace all these homes, I'm sure some of the Georgia-based ones, this could be one of the biggest hits, per se, they've ever taken, although the reason people want insurance is to actually get payments if things happen. If nobody ever thought they'd get any payment, insurance is worthless, as a, you know, piece of Post-it note that we just make up things on. and so that's where it's kind of at. Well, I guess, you know, we kind of branched off. We can keep talking about the floods and some other things about that, or we can get back to the poll and go to the Democratic side. How about we do ladies' choice? Catherine, which way do you want to go with this?
Oh, let's talk about Vice President Biden's visit, and then we can get back to the poll.
Okay, well, and then, of course, you know, the floods were horrific, and you know, you just see in the pictures of just so much underwater, houses and neighborhoods that, you know, don't even run behind rivers and stuff.
Well,
and,
let me just interrupt here. You know, I live in Metro Atlanta. One of our employees at the small business that we run was trapped. She could not leave her house. It took her 3 hours to get home on Monday, and then on Tuesday she called and she said, "There's no way out of my neighborhood." She was like surrounded by water, and she didn't get in until Thursday. She finally came back to work on Thursday. Hello?
David, are you still with us? I believe we might have lost David, Catherine.
The mute. Last weekend, I was in the same situation at Clayton General Hospital. The main road was washed completely out one way, and you had to go way out of the way, and I thought, this hospital is a major issue. But, of course, some federal help came, and I did get to hear that speech that Vice President Biden made. I thought it was an excellent one, and what was so good about it, one, he brought help. That was the main thing. But he could connect because he's lost his home due to a fire. I did not know that, but I thought, you know, when people can say, look, I can't sympathize with you, I can empathize with you because I've been through it, I think that's powerful.
Yeah, I agree.
Go ahead.
You with us, David?
Yeah, Tim, you got some thoughts on that?
Yes, sir, but I did want to tell you that I don't know if Catherine's hearing this, but you're not coming through well at all.
Yeah, it's blotchy.
It's spotty. Yeah, I'm going to work on that. But y'all talk
now
about
it. Now you're fine. Now you're fine. And what I was going to go into here was, you know, there have, at last count, I believe, 14 counties now been declared our federal disaster areas, and one of them is my county. Trying got nailed again like it always does, and tragically we had a young man, he was a hero really, got killed. He jumped out of the back of a truck, he saw a car submerged in flood water, and he thought somebody was in it, and he swam out to it. It was an abandoned car, and the young man lost his life.
Oh, that's awful.
In this thing. And really, I was really glad to see Vice President Biden come to Georgia. I believe he's probably the main reason that that number of counties jumped from 4 to 14, and we're just thankful that he came.
Yeah, and I think it really, it's very reassuring when someone like a vice president, someone at that level,
right,
comes and checks it out and talks to the people. You know, reading some of the quotes from people in the AP, from people who actually saw him, it really made a difference to them. You know, it really makes a difference when the vice president leans over and, you know, pats your child on the head and says, everything's going to be okay. You know, I mean, it seems like a small thing, but it really does have an impact on those people's lives. It makes them feel more confident that something really will happen. So I think those visits are important. They mean something to these people, and I think it's really great that. And he's a great person for that kind of thing because he's very sympathetic and very, you know, emotional. And I think I'm really glad he did it. And I think it was a good.
You're right about that, Catherine. Did you see that picture of him at that shelter in Marietta comforting that woman and hugging her? And you could tell by the look on his face. As a matter of fact, his eyes were closed. He didn't even know the camera was there. And the passion on that man's face was evident. He was genuinely touched by this situation, and he genuinely touched us.
Yeah, and it really does. It's important, and I think you're right. I think it jumped the number of counties that were declared, and it sort of, you know, reminds everybody around the country, because of course it's the vice president, so it gets coverage across the country.
Right.
So see, I mean, all my customers who are calling from around the country this week were like, "Is everything okay? Are you guys all right?" You know, we lost power for a couple hours, but that was all. We didn't have any problems with water, but it was a tough thing. And you know, one of the things that he said, I can't remember exactly how he put it, but he said, "Certainly, it's not at the level of Katrina, but for those of you who are affected by it, it's your Katrina." And I think it's really important.
Amen.
That, you know, because it's the individual people that are affected. You know, overall, yeah, it wasn't as bad as Katrina, but those individual people, they lost their homes, they lost everything they owned, many of them, and it's quite moving when that person shows up.
There would be those cynical people, too, who would say, well, the vice president came. What about the president? Well, the reason for that is the president was hosting the G20 summit.
Yeah, he was kind of busy.
In Pittsburgh. So he was. They said, of course, that he was monitoring the situation closely. And I'm sure he was in constant contact with the vice president. And I agree with you. The reason we jumped from 4 to 14 counties in this federal assistance thing had to be because of the vice president's visit. And if anybody from his staff or anybody's listening, we'd like to thank him, you know, for coming.
Yeah.
David, are you with us, sir?
Yeah, I'm back. I had a little technical difficulty. Okay. John did a great job. Well, I guess let's go ahead and then talk about the other, you know, so we had to branch one way than the other. We can pick up the Democratic side of that strategic vision poll. And it was the final question in strategic vision. Don't they just love to make the Democratic question last? I guess they're saving it for best for last, but that's probably not their purpose is there. But they polled the four candidates, the poor mayor of Ray City, Georgia. He didn't make the poll. But it was Roy Barnes, DeBose Porter, David Poitras, and Thurbert Baker. And like I said, Roy Barnes, that same 45 number just set in stone. But Thurbert
right.
Baker jumped big time, and I don't know if this is – I just know from other polls. He got to 30%. And
yeah,
basically – okay, go. I hear your button, Tim. What?
Yeah. What I'm comparing Baker's numbers to is the previous strategic vision poll. He gained a point from 29 to 30%. Now, you're probably thinking of the Rasmussen poll where he only polled at 9.
Yes, and so that's what I'm looking at that. Now, I'll tell you what, now see, if Thurbert Baker begins to jump any, then he's going to then, if he takes away part of Roy Barnes' voting, then there you have it. He is, right there tied with Roy Barnes. So I think Thurbert Baker right now is he's in a position to really watch.
Catherine, don't you think that if Thurbert Baker could pull into a tie with Governor Barnes that he'd beat him in a runoff?
I'm not convinced of that. I know a lot of people think that Thurbert's going to get a lot of a big majority of the African American vote, but I'm just not convinced of that from my anecdotal conversations with African-Americans
and this is a very layered question. If you look at the memo and what it said, you know, black voters don't show up well for runoffs. Cause so if you're thinking, oh, it's going to be all black vote, well, then he wouldn't have necessarily that great a shot at winning. But to me, the voters are going to show up the most likely to show back up at runoff time are going to be voters that are very hardcore Democrats in the Republican primary, hardcore Republicans. Therefore, those are going to be the kind of voters that are more likely to be offended by Governor Barnes' comments, so that would help.
Absolutely.
Those are the people
I'm talking about.
Yes,
yeah, well,
that's other group,
you make a good point.
And the other group that will show up is counties where, you know, rural Georgia counties, smaller Georgia counties where the sheriff's race, those type of county commissioner races are big time, and it's a Democratic primary will win the thing, and you're going to have a big number of voters. You may have some of those kind of voters that will probably more likely be turned off by Governor Barnes back in 2002 and less likely to have forgiven him for that. And so those voters aren't going to help him. Now, do they go to Baker? I don't know. I mean, that is a trickier situation. But and then, of course, you know, Thurber Baker is very popular among sheriffs, so then if he could tie that tough-as-nails thing in, then it could help him.
But, David, let's forget the name Baker. If angry voters are wanting to tell Roy Barnes something, they're just going to vote for the other guy.
That's true.
Whoever that is.
That is absolutely true.
I think that's what Tim's saying. That's what he's going to do.
I see what I wouldn't mind being in Thurber Baker's position today.
Right.
You know, and the other two candidates, I think one of the two, DeBose Porter or David Poitras, you think one of the two has to kind of break out from the other one. And thus far it hasn't happened. I mean, is that where some of that, what, 18% undecided goes? Because if you added 18%, if you added most of the undecided, let's say 15 of those points, then you start getting a little momentum. You got to get it quick enough. And then, of course, if points pull off of Barnes after this statement. But I know another thing we've talked about over and over, we were like, is Thurber Baker really in this race to win it and be in it? I think he is.
I think he is, too. What concerns me is still no one's running for lieutenant governor.
Yeah, I mean that is we had two races unfilled, if you will. And
let me throw in another question because I just can't get this out of my mind. We have elected so many statewide officials over the years out of the state legislature, and I just cannot understand why someone in DeVos Porter's position. It's like getting no traction, no movement at all. What do y'all think's going on there?
You think he's got to end up getting some of his colleagues in the state house to support him? Because if they support him, then that's going to really play in favor for him, getting that support. I don't know why he hasn't, but that's something he's really – I think that's the first move I'd make is to get that support. I mean, wouldn't that be y'all's first move?
Yeah, but I think that might be hard. I think that there's a lot of state legislators who are, you know, big Roy Barnes fans and Thurber Baker fans. You know, I mean, I think it's I think unlike – you know, where you maybe have, like, say in the Republican primary, where you've got a congressional candidate or a congressional elected official and then two statewide candidates, you've got, you know, there's some, you can, Nathan Deal can appeal to his congressional district and try to get some of that support. But with the people we have running for on the Democratic side, they all have leadership experience with our state legislature.
Oh yeah,
and so I think it's a little bit of a. I mean, the one who doesn't is Poitras, but he just can't get any traction.
Yeah, and I kind of thought that he might be kind of the you know more left leaning protest candidate that would pick up some votes, and he still may be. I think that's kind of his strategy.
Well, he's
got
to start talking
background.
About it. If he wants to do that, he's got to start talking about David Poitras and stop talking about Roy Barnes.
I agree with that.
Yeah, because this time you need to build. I don't think, and also I think if Phil Barnes can make these kind of comments, he's cutting himself a whole lot worse than you can cut him with your comments. So I think that is a valid thought there.
Yeah, and what do you think the Republicans are going to do with that comment should Governor Barnes win the primary season? Oh, goodness.
They're going to say what
you said. If you want a Republican, vote for a Republican.
Yeah, vote for the real deal, they'll say.
Yeah.
Oh, my.
You know, I've said a lot for a long time, like, if you have a choice between Coke and Big K Cola, you're going to go for Coke.
Right.
Well, if it's the same price, that's Big K.
There you go.
half the price, then. But I don't think Roy Barnes would be a good fit for Big K Cola, because he's a more of a big spender than that. So for whatever that is.
But
worth.
I mean, no. It's just like, you have to, if you're a Democrat, you have to be a Democrat.
There you go.
I'm tired of these people who are. You know, it's a theme that comes up over and over. We see it all the time, and especially for a primary candidate. I mean, it just doesn't make sense to me. But
I think that strategy used to work better than it does now, but I just don't think. I just think now that the primaries are much more polarized, the two parties, I just don't think you get the same bang you used to by running away from your party.
Yeah, and you don't see any Republicans down here running like Democrats.
No, you don't.
No, I guess you'd say, hey, up in New England, that's where you get that, you know, Olympia Snow or some of those characters in Connecticut.
Well, those Republicans have about the same political leanings as the average Democrat would, you know, in a state like South Carolina, Alabama, something like that.
But that's
I always say that. If these people were in Michigan or, you know, the Northeast, they'd be Republicans, these Democrats.
Right.
Yeah. So, I mean, that's, although I guess Michigan has a little more conservative social leanings than a New England state still.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
Well, I guess kind of carrying on to other things, and so since we want to stay in the South but need to cover some other states besides Georgia, in Kentucky in the past few weeks, there was a very, very sad occurrence, and I don't think it got as much attention early as it probably should have. But a census worker going ahead and doing census, doing some pre-work, if you will, for the census, apparently was killed because they found his body unclothed with the word "fed" written across him, and he was bound with duct tape. Very horrific. Now, of course, they haven't been able to say if he was murdered or if it was some type of suicide, although I don't know how that would work as a suicide. But then they also said that, they can't say that it was just purposely because he was a federal employee, even though "fed" was written on there, or if it was just a random killing and they happened to see he was a federal worker and just decided to write that. Hard determination to make, but to me there seems like some kind of link. Catherine, what do you think?
Well, I think, someone hanged and with "fed" written across there, I think it's pretty obvious. I mean,
yeah.
I'm not a CSI person or a, you know, detective, but it seems pretty provocative. I mean, why would you do that? I mean, this person was hanged is very dramatic. I mean, that's it conjures up all kinds of historical icons, and then to have that scrawled across his body is it's just horrific.
Yeah, that's. I think that there has to be some link there. Tim, your thoughts?
Yeah, well, this was in Clay County, Kentucky. It's one of the poorest counties in the United States. It's also, at least part of the county, is in a big national forest there. There's another angle here. There's lots of meth labs and pot fields in that area, and it's about harvest time right now for pot. He could have stumbled across a pot field in his travels and been killed for that reason.
Oh, that's a really.
I really hope it was that reason instead of the fact that he was a census worker. I mean, it's a brutal, senseless killing, but it would be more understandable to me if it was over drugs or something like that than if it was over the fact that the poor man was a census worker. It's just a tragedy. And
yes.
Suicide, where do they get that?
Well,
how does he hang himself and scratch "fed" on his chest?
That is, that's why I thought that seems a little far-fetched. That's just me.
Yeah.
But then I'll say this, let's look at it. Of course, it's horrible. It's wrong. Murder, I mean, you know, it's the seven, it is the deadly sin, if you will.
Yeah.
But let's just look at it utilitarian-wise. What do these rural Kentucky citizens get out of being undercounted in the census. I mean, okay, let's say you hate, you know, big cities, and you hate minorities, and you hate, you know, diversity, whatever it may be. Well, that means that your area, if they don't count everybody because everybody's afraid to go to every, you know, place in your county, they're going to undercount you, and they're going to count more illegal aliens or, you know, folks in big cities or whatever it may be. And that means your state, your community, is going to get less resources or less representation in government, meaning there'll be more big government liberals serving in the government. You know, I'm trying to talk like one of these folks. Why do they not want to be counted? Any ideas, Tim or Catherine?
Oh, I never have understood this this thing that people have about the census. I mean, it's in the, you know, it's part of our heritage. It's not like, but there's a lot of people who are against it. You know, it's a very volatile issue.
Well, I know the theory of, oh, everybody being counted, that's like, you know, what was it, Pilate in the Bible count, or was it Pilate, or was it Herod during Jesus' time? Herod, you know, counted everybody, and everybody had to go to their birthplace, and, you know, and that was, you know, considered very heavy-handed, but here they house calls, it's not as heavy-handed, but I guess there's some of that type of thought, but I just don't see what the deal is.
I read a story from another gentleman who was a census worker in that area in 2000. Oh, and by the way, it was Augustus Caesar who decreed the census in Jesus, the time of Jesus' birth. But anyway, they were suspicious of questions like, you know, what is your income? They wanted to know, why does the government need to know things like that? So the people are just suspicious by nature. And there have been other, you know, incidents of things like this happening to census workers, you know, over the years around the country. This is not the first time this has happened. That's why I'm still wondering if this is not a drug thing, guys. I know I keep harping on that, but it just seems the most logical to me, don't it, you?
Oh, yeah,
well,
that
makes
a lot of sense to me. And the fact that he had Fed written across, you know, just like he's a, you know, he's a narc.
A narc, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I think why is a legitimate question if these folks are like, why do you need to know how much money I make? But I'm sure the census workers tell why. You know, I don't see why it has to be this controversial to where people are this angry about it. But, I mean, it is, and I wonder if this is going to be this kind of thing where you don't see necessarily more of this, but like, you know, census workers get run out of neighborhoods or have their cars run off the road or things like that. I mean, do y'all think it's going to grow and there's going to be more of it?
It seems to be a meme with the right, you know, this whole Big Brother, you know, they're all like, think Barack Obama's going to try to, you know, control the world.
Yeah. I mean, I think something that unfortunately we'll have to kind of watch, if you will, you know, to see where it's going. But I guess, you know, we've talked about a lot of topics, but I think we had some more on the agenda. One I think I'd mentioned that even though we're a Southern program, it just was too, you know, juicy, I think, not to talk about was in Connecticut, there is a Senate race. Christopher Dodd, I think some people feel he's vulnerable, and as many as, what, 5 Republicans have announced plans to seek this office, and one of them is a nationally known figure, Linda McMahon, who's married to Vince McMahon, who owns the World Wrestling Federation, has announced this past week that she wants to run for that office. And, of course, they have, you know, they're billionaires, and they have lots of money, and then, of course, she has, I guess in theory at her disposal, like 7 or 8 hours of national programming in which she's appeared on in the past, and her husband appears and her children appear on almost a weekly basis. What do you think of this campaign? Catherine, what do you think?
I'm going to say it again. The Republicans, the gift that keeps on giving.
Yeah, but, I mean, I'll say this in her defense. I mean, she's no Mark Sanford or David Vitter. Really, the WWF story writers, and that's what they really have, they write scripts, their story writers probably couldn't come up with stuff as salacious and intriguing as David Vitter and Mark Sanford. I mean, they're not that good. You know what I mean? Tim, what's your thoughts on this?
Well, looks like so far there's five Republican hats in the ring up there. I'm going to take maybe the devil's advocate approach a little bit. Let's say this lady will run as savvy a campaign as I think she might can because of her business-oriented background. Obviously, she can get her hands on a king's ransom. Money is not going to be a problem. She actually runs this business, which means she's very good with organizational skills. I understand she's a pretty good public speaker.
She's already on the state school board of state board of education.
So it's not like she just come in off the farm. If she could pull in the teens or upwards around 20%, she could throw that Republican primary into a tizzy up there.
Yeah.
I mean, it could be a barn burner. So
yeah,
don't sell her short.
I think it's going to be interesting to watch. And now, as far as I think she has a good shot at the primary. And now, I don't think that Chris Dodd is that vulnerable. I don't think he went from presidential candidate. And, you know, obviously he was no better than the fourth, you know, candidate, probably fifth. I think I have to say Biden did better than him. He caught the eye of at least one Democrat in the nation who decided to make him his running mate. But then I remember after when they talked about the home housing bills, you know, Chris Dodd asked for a lot of transparency, and people, I think, rallied around him kind of in the late stages of the presidential campaign, and he got to be a big hero on the blogs. Which means that, you know, the blogosphere may come heavily to his defense, and I think we've all seen that's no bad thing to have.
Well, but, you know, he does have a little – he has had a little bit of trouble because, you know, he got one of those special loan mortgages from one of those banks, and he didn't know it at the time, but he did get one. And a lot of more progressive people have problems with him because of some of the banking stuff. But – he's a great guy, and he's been a senator forever, and his father was a senator.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there's a great Woody Guthrie song, Phil Oak song that features his father.
He's history there. In Connecticut, I mean, just look at the makeup of Connecticut. It is a, you know, it's a New England state. Republicans just don't do well in New England states.
And we're also talking about something else. He chairs the Senate Banking Committee, which means he is going to be in the forefront of some of these major reform efforts of, you know, financial regulation and stuff like that. And so he's going to be out there, and he's going to be out there in a positive way because he's going to have the bully pulpit, you know, going after the banks for the little guy. So, you know, I agree with you, David. I think he's going to wind up winning rather comfortably next year.
No,
yeah. I absolutely think so.
Yeah,
I don't think he's in danger, but I don't think he's a shoo-in, like, you know, some people might think. He's been a senator since 1981.
Yeah, and really, I mean, I think people will understand it. A lot of times senators have more trouble winning re-election the House members do because they only run once every 6 years. I think Dick Morris in his book, The New Prince, actually pointed that out, and I thought was a, you know, very astute observation. And he backed it up with figures, you know, saying that, look, if you look at the figures, this is how often, you know, certain folks win in these races and those. And it's just the truth is there, if you will.
Well, look, guys, let's be honest. We're looking at all of this polling for races that are coming in 14 months. And, oh, my, a lot of stuff can happen between now and then. I'm going to be honest. We had a rough August. The president had a rough August. That town hall bunch or whatever they are, they beat us over the head for the whole month. And the polling numbers of Democrats across the board, you know, suffered. as a result. But for me to say 14 months before the Connecticut Senate election that Chris Dodd is on life support, boy, that's premature. And,
yeah.
and we're going to see that. If yeah. the president pulls off health care reform and if the economy begins to recover and some other things and jobs start coming back, those polls are going to start swinging with it. And guys like Dodd are not going to be in trouble.
No, I don't think so. And I mean, I don't know what health care reform, you know, how popular that is in Connecticut. But you would think it would be better. Like, for instance, I guess one thing we didn't get a chance to talk to on the strategic vision poll was the approval rating of the president and the right track, wrong track numbers for Georgia. And that's where I will say that I thought this strategic vision poll was not very strong. I mean, it had the approval rate for the president at 34%. Now, his number in Georgia was, what, 48%? I just don't think he's lost 14% of the voters that voted for him. Actually, it's 35 for overall. It's 14 on the economy. His handling on health care, he would have lost 15% of the voters that voted for him. The war in Afghanistan, 39. The Iraq War, what's funny is the Iraq War is 45. He gets a different thing there. I'm trying to look for the health care, you know, what the support is for it on the state. And I'm trying to look. Okay, 35%, 55% opposed. I just don't think that health care is that big a net negative. I don't know if y'all heard about the national New York Times poll, but it showed that like half of Republicans want a public option in the CBS Times New York Times poll. So, you know, something's got to give, if you will, and I believe it's the Strategic Vision's numbers. And as we found out this past week, they don't release crosstabs. Tim, what can you tell us about that?
Yeah, a situation came up with a national organization that kind of monitors those certain things. I believe it's the AAPOR, if I'm not mistaken. They actually censured Strategic Vision because they were the only major polling organization in the country who did not provide crosstabs. And they cited two major polls that they didn't provide anything on, even though they had been asked to do it. I believe it was for the New Hampshire presidential primary. And it might have been Iowa or one of those other states, but they were both during the presidential primary season in late 07 and early 08. I am mystified as to why they would have done this. I have actually never heard of a major polling organization being cited in this way by the group that the umbrella group, essentially, that oversees them. So they've got some explaining to do, and so far they have said nothing. I know that Nate Silver, you know, at 538.com, has actually attempted to contact David Johnson and, you know, has really gotten nowhere with it, so...
David Johnson, on Friday, Johnson said that they categorically deny it and they are going to take legal action.
Well, then,
it was libelous.
Then he's saying that the umbrella organization that oversees all those companies
kicked
them out and just made this up?
They aren't a member of the AAPOR.
Yeah, which I guess, I mean, to me it's not slander. Then, but what he should say is like, well, why should we release our crosstabs? All we wanted to give is the top lines. Because I know there's some organization, I guess, I mean, I have to read the wording, but I know, like, for instance, you know, like Rasmussen Reports, sometimes they give out the top lines for free, but then you have to pay to get crosstabs.
But guys, in all the time that this organization has asked for these, they have never been turned down by any major polling organization ever.
Well,
why would Strategic Vision suddenly do that?
I think it looks bad on them. If I were them, I'd release them. And if there's the reason they're not releasing them, they better fix it real quick. And I wonder if that, then the next round of strategic vision polls we get are going to reflect different things. Although, from what my understanding, the polls that strategic vision does is kind of like what's called door openers. I mean, it's basically just a way to for people to get information about their business. You know, their business, I mean, they don't make money off these polls. So if their business doesn't look good because of these polls, then they don't serve the purpose they want them to.
Well, and then at the end of, I'm just looking at an article in the AJC from Friday. At the end of it, he says, we're going to release the crosstabs.
Well, maybe we can see
these I mean, why didn't they do that to start with? That's what this, all of this was about.
Yeah.
It hurt their credibility. I don't see any way they can come out of this looking any better, especially from the political junkies like us all over the country that live with these poll results. I'm going to think about this from now on.
Exactly.
It
puts their credibility on the table every time now. You know,
right.
Not just once, but every time. It's like, oh, well, you know, how does it compare to the other ones? And, well, you know them. They're not, you know. I mean, I do think it hurts their credibility, and I'm sure they realize that, and they're probably going to be doing a lot to try to shore that up, I would imagine. I would hope.
Yeah, I think we all would. Well, Tim, it sure was good having you back. I tell you what I think I'm going to do to close us out tonight is, you know, John Brenneman of the Humor Gazette and the Boston Herald sends us things, and he sends it for the national show, but I've been playing on this show, and he's got another one. I believe this one's on deaf panels. Could have been on Glenn Beck. He's always got funny stuff. So I think we'll go ahead and close out with that. But for the Cudzy Vine, it's been a good September. Night.
Good night.
Thanks, guys.
Good evening. I'm Triple Action News anchorman Reed Page. This just in. President Obama's death panel claimed its first victim today when South Carolina Congressman Joe Wilson's pants mysteriously caught on fire just days after he falsely called the president a liar. The White House said it could neither confirm nor deny that Wilson's death was the work of a government death panel led by 91-year-old Senator Robert the Vulture Byrd and Vice President Joe Biden, who also heads the president's gaffe panel. A possible second victim has not yet been confirmed, but sources claim the Arizona minister, who said he is praying for Obama to die, has himself been struck down by either a bolt of lightning or a government-issued taser. Congressman Wilson's unexpected dirt nap sparked fears among leading GOP a-holes that someone is taking their ridiculous death panel lie and bringing it to life with violent vigilante action against those who poison the American dialogue with harmful disinformation and hate. Fox News numbskull Glenn Beck, whose anti-Obama jihad includes calling the president a racist who hates white people, is fortifying his rubber broadcast room with Kevlar. And Rush Limbaugh is said to be holed up in a Dick Cheney bunker at an undisclosed location. Pundits say that, if it exists, the alleged death panel will likely be heading to Alaska soon for a house call with noted death panel expert Sarah Palin. For Triple Action News, I am Anchorman Reed Page.